Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 141 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is October 27th, 2010. We've got a really exciting show for you this week on the podcast. Lots to get to. USC taking on the University of Oregon this weekend, ranked number one in the AP poll. USC ranked number 24. We're going to get to all of that. If you have any questions or comments, and you do have a bunch of them today, drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com. That's our email address. Or if you want to give us a call, 206-888-6755. Give us a call and leave a voicemail. That would be wonderful. And what's also wonderful is talking to the coach, Harvey Hyde. We like to talk to him in the first segment each and every week here on the Peristyle Podcast. This is no different. Coach, how are you doing, sir?
Ryan, I'm doing great. It's game week after a bye week, and it's time to get back after it. Last Saturday was sort of empty. When you don't have football in Southern California, I have an empty feeling. I love football in Southern California, whether it's USC or UCLA. It seems sort of weird not to have a game in the Coliseum or the Rose Bowl. And I'm looking forward to, again, this Saturday. The only problem is they're both playing at home. I'd like to see one on the road and one at home and at different times. You know, so many times we have buys the same week, UCLA and SC, they play at the same time on national television. I know a lot of people don't like to go to both games, but me being the type of guy I am, I like to watch both teams play, either in person or on television, one or the other. So here we go again, a game at 12:30 and a game at 5. So it's going to be difficult to watch much of the UCLA game against Arizona, because I'm going to tell you, that's going to be an important game for the Trojans down the road. But we'll take the number one team in the country, the Oregon Ducks, in the Coliseum at 5 p.m. Saturday night against USC. It can't get much bigger than that. In fact, I think everyone's pointing as that as the biggest game of the weekend.
Certainly. USC, ESPN's game day will be down there 6 in the morning. I think that gets started. Woof, that's a little early. And if you want to go to that game, you don't have a ticket yet, go to sctickets.com. That's our sponsor for this segment, Southern California Tickets. Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com. It's all in the name. Or you can give them a call, 1-800-888-7287. Coach, it's going to be crazy this weekend. This is the time. Is the defense that played against Cal going to show up, or is the defense that played pretty much the rest of the schedule going to show up against Oregon? Because that's the number one offense in the country.
Well, I don't know what's going to show up for either team. Obviously, it is the number one offense in the country as far as I am concerned. You don't really stop Oregon. Their type of offense is an offense that you just want to slow them down and then have them help you as far as having an opportunity to beat them. They are going to get their points because they isolate you one-on-one so much and spread you all over the field. And I like this quarterback, Thomas, this year. He really does stand in the pocket and doesn't just take off running until he's sure that someone's not open. He throws a great pass, really spirals that really gets to his receivers. He can thread the seam really well. So I think when you talk defense this week, I don't think we're going to talk much defense on either side of the ball, because I think SC will have success offensively too. I think it's going to come down to the team that allows or has the less mistakes. I really believe that. And doesn't have turnovers, doesn't beat themselves, has good field position, takes advantage of scoring opportunities. It's going to be that type of football game, but it's going to be a great game. And, you know, every week now, for the past 3 weeks, the number one team in the nation has gone down. So let's see what happens this week.
Yeah, we certainly will. It's going to be a great watch, Coach. And hopefully people can get down there and check out the game. Now, we do have a bunch of questions. There's a lot of Oregon questions and kind of technical coaching questions, so we thought we'd ask you about this stuff. The first one is from JC. He wants to know, how do you stop a mobile quarterback and draw plays to the running back? You talked about Randall Cunningham before, and you need athletic players to be able to stop him. And who is assigned to cover that quarterback? If he drops back, the linebackers often have to drop in the coverage. Is a situation on your defensive line to push a pass rush? And if the QB beats the defensive line, who's there to cover them? So he just kind of wants to know, how do you do that? How do you defense one of these guys?
Well, I tell you, I wish I had the answer, baby. I put a patent on it, you know? I think this is what the new spread offense and the Wildcat and all of this has caused, especially if you have a tremendous athlete like Cam Newton at Auburn and these other great athletes that are playing quarterback as Thomas is at Oregon. And that's a little bit different than the Wildcat, what they're doing up there at Oregon. You know, you really need about 14 players to stop everything that Oregon does. It's almost impossible what they do as far as spreading the field. I don't think you can get it done with 12. It's really difficult because they really want to put you man-on-man with everybody. So they call the formation, they see how you're going to cover the formation, and then they call the play. And they still run all their options off of it in the reads by putting, obviously, you spread the field, don't put it back in the backfield if they choose to do that. Put James in motion, bring him across, and still hand him off the ball. Still play action pass. Your quarterback is a passer and a great runner. He can still run option, or he can run, like you mentioned, the quarterback draw, or if the passes happen to be covered, he can run right up the middle and get yardage. So it's almost impossible to stop it all. And when you talk to defensive coaches, and the defensive coach just sits there and stares at the screen, because if you do this, they do that. If this guy's better than your guy, then it's not going to happen. They try to match you up and spread the field where they put you in an impossible situation, where if that guy doesn't cover James as a flanker or one of their receivers or whatever, then you get the big play. They are not a time of possession team. If you look at the stats, and I haven't examined them completely, but I would bet you that in almost every game they have the ball, time of possession less than everybody else. Why? It doesn't take them long to score. I mean, when you watch some of their drives, a long drive is 10 plays or 6 plays because they're so explosive and someone makes a mistake and all of a sudden they take advantage of it. So what you want to do is bend but not break. You want to be able to keep your offense on the field. You want to be able to run your offensive clock down so that you're snapping the ball when you only have 2 or 3 seconds left on the clock. You want it to be a short game. You want it to be where your offense can match their offense, and you're going to have to because their offense is going to score. So what you have to be able to do is put yourself in a position where you don't create any turnovers, where your offense maintains the ball. When they're not on the field and they don't have that opportunity to be explosive, and try to get up on them or match them and then be able to sustain an intensity and great tackling. I'll tell you, they worked on tackling this week, Monday, at USC's practice. Because if you miss a tackle, they're gone. So you've got to settle up. You've got to wrap up. They spread the field so far, you don't get immediate help. And also, what happens, you've got to talk to the officiating crew. And I would, if I was Coach Kiffin, I would take a video of the last game that this crew worked. I would time out exactly how long it took them to spot the ball, and I would then record it, and I would make sure that I'd send a copy of that to the officials, director of officials in the Pac-10 office, and I'd say, if this crew speeds up the game to enhance Oregon snapping the ball faster than what that crew normally works, then it's an unfair advantage. And the way you can tell that, have you ever watched the end of a game when there's 10 seconds left in a game and you see the headlineman run in there or you see the umpire grab the football and run up and spot the ball? That's not what they've done the entire game. They haven't run around and spot the game. They're trying to give the offense another play before the time runs out. Well, that's not the pace that they've been working the game. So I would make sure that there's no change as far as in the pace of the game, as far as spotting the ball and so on, than what this crew has worked in the past. Now, Oregon made some mistakes. They got some sacks on Mazzoli, threw some bad passes, and he slowed them down, and and Ohio State scored. So if that happens on Saturday, SC's got to accomplish the same type of thought as far as, hey, we're not going to shut them down. What we're going to hope to do is match them and hope that they mess up some things, fumble the ball, throw an interception, slow them down so we can capitalize with our offense too, because our offense isn't bad either, and they're going to have their fits with us.
All right. Well, that's a question from JC. Thank you very much for that one. Let's go to, let's see. How about Dave Kendall? He's in Tustin, California, USC class of 1971. He has some issues with the quarterback situation. And I think some of the people that have been kind of, there's been some talk about Mitch Mustaine and things like that. He's really happy with the fact that USC has two quarterbacks and the fact that they could go through. I mean, think of what happened when John David Buda got hurt against Stanford. If the staff had confidence in Mark Sanchez, who obviously ended up being a good quarterback, that game could have been different. Oregon's Dennis Dixon got hurt at the end of his senior season. That really hurt the Oregon Ducks. So he feels comfortable with Mitch Mustaine, and he thinks he could be starting almost anywhere else, and he hates to see him being ignored. And he could be really important factor, as well as Matt Barkley's playing. He's got 20 touchdowns and only 4 picks. Mitch Mustaine could still be an important factor in this season. He wanted to know how you feel about this, and shouldn't someone be emphasizing the value of having not just two, but, just not having one, but two capable quarterbacks there ready to play?
Well, I think everyone is aware of Mitch Mustaine. He's a great kid. He's a great quarterback. And I think I've been saying it all along here on our podcast that I think he'll go probably in the second or third round in the NFL draft. I really believe that. First of all, he's not beat up. He hasn't played that much since he's been a freshman. He can't do anything but get better. He moves well, throws well on the run. And everyone recognizes what he's been through, so they're knowing that he's a great team player. And if he is a backup, it certainly isn't going to upset him for several years to be in the NFL, learn the offense, and be there ready to play there. But he's experienced that already. He played as a freshman at Arkansas. We all know what a great job he did there. I've watched him in the spring. I thought he had a great spring game when Matt Barkley couldn't play. Threw for 5 touchdown passes in the spring game. You're normally never in a situation where you have two capable quarterbacks like that. Normally, and I'm going to tell you, normally when you have two quarterbacks like that, you got a problem. Because one of them isn't happy or goes along with the deal that's going on and either quits or transfers or whatever, and he could have done that this year. He could have moved on, but he didn't do that. So that just shows you the type of quality kid he really is. He's there in the wings in case something happens to Matt Barkley, but it's all going to pay off for him. It's all going to pay off for Mitch Mustaine. You watch. He's going to be a great player and play many years.
All right. Well, we hope for that. He's a great kid, and you want to see him do well. And just to clarify, Dave, thanks for writing in. I got a little confused. I changed up your question a little bit. You were talking about Aaron Corpin there, but I was a little confused the way it was worded, but I think you understand that Aaron Corp's not on the team anymore. He transferred to the University of Richmond. He started playing pretty well and got hurt. So I think he's out for the rest of the season, but just wanted to clarify that, Dave. Write back if there was something different, if I didn't say your question right. But just FYI, there's two good quarterbacks on this team, and they got some young guys and stuff as well, but two capable quarterbacks that could start right away, like you talked about, Matt Barkley and Mitch Mustaine. Michael in Canada, up in Toronto. So he has some kind of theories. He kind of wrote a long email, but he summarized it a little bit. I'll read that here. To play against Oregon, he wants to ensure that USC finds a way to confuse their offensive line and their blocking assignments and what the quarterback reads, be aggressive but still be disciplined, and not let them dictate what to do by showing them the same defensive formation. He thinks that an aggressive approach is a way to get the players pumped up and the crowd into the game, and Oregon will get their yards, but you can't sit back and keep players in front of us, because before you know it, they will be behind us. That's Michael's theory on how you got to slow down or stop this Oregon offense. What do you think about that, Coach?
Well, first of all, the way they run their offense, they release the ball so quickly. They're always in a gun formation, or the quarterback is back off the line of scrimmage, and they read it so quickly and release the ball so quickly, it's very difficult to get to him, okay? And if you start doing a lot of blitzing, obviously they bring their backs in and help pick up some of the blitzes. And if you ever get hit, remember, if you ever hit a blitzing team, then you're gone, because if you're playing man behind it or whatever zone, they've got you spread out throughout the entire field, and these guys run straight to the goal line. I think he's right. I think you have to at least let him think a little bit with your coverages and so on. Maybe disguise your coverages, move around after he gets the play and looks at the sideline. And when he looks at the sideline again, if he's confused and needs to get a reread on the defense before he snaps the ball, you can move back to what you're doing. But at the same time, you don't want to confuse yourself. The worst thing that can happen to you on defense is confuse your defensive players when you're trying to confuse the offensive players. So you've got to make sure you have your team understand the game plan and what you're doing and how to play this Oregon team. Because if you do make a mistake defensively, it's going to cost you and cost you dearly. So you got to make sure that whatever you put in and what your game plan is, it's sound. The players understand it. They know the responsibilities. Because if you make a mistake against Oregon, the way they spread the field and you give them so much room to manipulate whatever they're doing and run for the goal line, you're in really a lot of trouble. But I know what he's saying. He can jump around. They snap the ball quickly. If you go after him, I don't know if you can get him, because he releases the ball so quickly, and they'll go to their screen type of offense and play calls so that most of their plays then will have an option of a screen or dump off to someone, because they know you might be coming a lot. So you got to really be careful, because they get big plays out of those. So they have hot receivers, and they have bump blocks where you bump and get off and so on. And you know how many different types of screens they have, slip screens and everything else. So you got to be really careful with that. So I think what you do is you play solid, good, sound defense. And you try to slow them down, and you bend a little bit, but you don't break. And you depend a lot on your offense, and you also play the type of defense that you hope they will make a mistake. The reason they got beat in the Rose Bowl, they made some mistakes. And Mazzoli had to look around, and he was a little confused because of the coverages were really sound in the secondary. And the play-action pass did not confuse Ohio State, because they were playing at home. So you have some great ideas. How you play them, who knows? Because a lot of people hadn't had a lot of great success against him. But I think what SC has to rely on, too, is a home crowd that's enthusiastic. They haven't played that well on the road. Yes, they went into Tennessee. They were down 13-0, then came back and scored 48 unanswered points. But normally, they don't have the same type of advantage that they do when they play in Eugene. I've heard everybody talk about it, that it might be the toughest stadium in America to play in. So when you leave that stadium, sometimes you lose a lot of the swagger. It stays there with them. So you got to hope a little bit of the swagger stays in Eugene.
Yeah, and USC's got to get that swagger. And just from looking at practice so far, they really seem to be pumped up for this contest. And if they fall flat on their face, it would be a surprise to me. I mean, to me, just from looking at the way this team is fired up, it looks like they're going to be able to keep it close. I think Matt Barkley will get this offense rolling, and they'll be able to try to match tit for tat, you know, with what Oregon does. And, obviously you want to look at the USC defense trying to slow Oregon down, but the USC offense doesn't really have a lot of room to make mistakes. They can't just take possessions off. Every possession is going to be key. So, you turn the ball over or you do something and drop a pass on third down. I mean, that's really not going to be a good recipe for USC. They need to be just sharp on offense and put pressure on Oregon. If you get ahead and you can keep scoring, you make Oregon have to score every time they touch the ball. I think it's easier to break a big, Michael James break a big 50-yard run for a touchdown when Oregon's up a couple touchdowns, as opposed to they're down a couple of touchdowns and they need to try to play catch up. So I think the key for me is just going to be make sure this offense, which can score, doesn't make mistakes and shoot themselves in the foot.
Right. I agree with what you're saying there, Ryan. And I think that's exactly what the coaches are talking about with this team. And I tell you, a good way to measure the game, the odds makers in Las Vegas, I don't know how they do it. I really can't figure it out. But they're always normally, I would say, right on the number or close to the number. And Oregon being the number one team in the country, a seven-point favorite over SC. That's not a lot of points. When you scored 72, 60, 50-some, that's not a lot of points difference in a football game. So that they're telling you by that number, I believe they are, that this is going to be a close football game, a touchdown either way. Hey, that's not two scores. That's one score. So I think that's a way to measure it, too. And I look at that, too, to see just what the professionals think about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wasn't even sure what the spread was, but I should have. I knew to ask the coach because he's all tied into Las Vegas, so that's good stuff.
Well, it opened at 6, and all the money went to Oregon. Then it went to 6.5 to 7, and now I think it went back to 6.5, and I think right now it's 7 today on Wednesday. So it's all within a touchdown. So, you know, when it's within a touchdown, I'm going to tell you, that's close when you have two teams that score as many points as these teams score. So really, that's not a big difference.
No, and you're talking about the number one team in the country, too. So USC obviously not used to being an underdog, but this is one, like the Stanford game, they were a big underdog in that one. They were, you know, a double-digit underdog in that one. But this is definitely a winnable game for USC. They seem fired up. I wouldn't be shocked if USC can go out there and do it. I think it'll be a close game either way. And hopefully for USC and their fans and everything, it's not one of those heartbreakers at the end where you lose by a field goal or something along those lines.
Well, I hope not. I'll tell you, it's a tremendous challenge. But I tell you, that's what it's all about, going to USC or going to Oregon, these type of games. This is what it's all about for fans, football fans who will be at the Coliseum, or people who have scheduled their day on Saturday to say, hey, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be in front of the television, or I'm going to be at the Coliseum, or I'm going to be doing this now because I'm not going to miss this game. And this is what it's all about. Two great teams, two great traditions. What can get better than this? Really, just the anticipation of the game makes you nervous, not the game itself. I think once the game starts, it's a little different. You sort of get into the flow of it. But it's the anticipation of the game, the nervousness, the thinking of the game, is what it's all about. And I'll tell you, that's why you have to be really careful as a coach not to get your team to play today or tomorrow, but on Saturday at 5 p.m. because your kids only have so much emotion, and you don't want to get them mentally fatigued thinking about the game. So you got to have a lot of reaction or relaxation and not too much fire up. Just let them get through it, but they know what they have to do.
All right. Well, Coach, we appreciate the insight as always, and we'll talk to you next week, see what happened in this huge matchup between USC and Oregon. Thanks for joining us.
Ryan, buddy, thank you very much. And for all of our listeners out there, I want to thank you again for your questions. Keep them rolling, and good luck to everybody this weekend.
All right. Everyone else, we'll be back in 30 seconds. We're going to talk some more USC football. Stay tuned.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. We're going to talk a little recruiting in this segment with USCFootball.com. National recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez. Nobody does it better. Gerard, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Ready for a huge weekend of recruiting for USC, and obviously a huge game, and it's kind of cool when those things coincide. It seems in years past, we've always, you know, either had a big game or a big recruiting weekend. It looks like be a little bit of both. So just like old times, the expectations around the program a little higher than they've been in past weeks. So we'll see if they come to play.
For sure. And just by, you know, maybe we can clarify a little bit what you mean by a big recruiting weekend. There's going to be a lot of, well, I don't know, maybe official, but definitely a lot of unofficial visitors and maybe some official visitors as well. And this isn't ever set in stone, that the staff's always working trying to get guys, and sometimes guys can't make it or they decide they're going to make it at the last minute. But it looks like there's going to be a lot of potential prospects and potential future Trojans here on the sidelines looking at USC playing Oregon.
Definitely. And it's really a matter of, you know, getting the local kids. And, you know, with USC right now, every game that they can bring in guys that are already committed, and USC has a dozen commitments right now, and a couple of the top players in Southern California, DeAnthony Thomas being a big name that's committed to USC that USC wants to hold on to, George Farmer, a kid that's not committed to USC yet, but, you know, USC's in good shape with him. Those are the type of players that you want to continue to have around the program. You want to have a good showing at big games like this, and this is obviously a national game. A lot of people are looking to see, you know, where is USC? Are they relevant? Just because they can't go to a bowl game, are they still a team that needs to be reckoned with in the Pac-10? Where do they go forth into the Pac-12? Is this the new era of Oregon where, you know, you come in with this spread option offense and obviously scoring a lot of points and really probably the most efficient offense that the country has seen in a long time? It's a clash of styles. It's a clash of, you know, old tradition against the new Nike school. A lot of people want to kind of see that contrast, and so they're pumped up about the game, and obviously that brings in the recruits. It brings in, like I said, the local recruits, guys that come in on unofficial visits, and those unofficial visits sometimes are just as important as the official visits. And speaking of the official visits, it's going to be a weekend where maybe USC tries to bring in some guys from out of state, some guys from back east, and obviously that's a big deal. You just never know. I think with this coaching staff, with Ed Orgeron and Lane Kiffin, the aggressiveness of this coaching staff, they're going to keep working. They're going to keep after it, and they're going to keep bringing in top guys regardless of you know, what other people think of USC from a media standpoint. And so, you know, that makes it interesting, and it's just a form for USC to kind of display what they have now and really what they have for the future, because obviously I think, you know, with the sanctions, people are kind of looking forward to what USC has with Lane Kiffin and how, you know, you're going to see the changes from Pete Carroll. And this is really one of the first games where, you know, USC's a decided underdog, and a lot of people are looking at Oregon as being maybe a possible national championship contender. And so, you know, they're coming into the Coliseum, and USC, you know, first time in a long time, is really going to have to step it up and prove that that they're still on that elite level.
All right. Well, how important is it, Gerard? You've talked to recruits before. It's obviously a big weekend. You got a lot of recruits going to be on the sidelines checking out the game. USC loses the game tight. Maybe they get blown out. Maybe they win a tight one. Maybe they blow out Oregon. I mean, whatever happens, does that affect how these recruits are making their decisions along the line? Is that a big deal, or is it just depend on the guy?
You know, it depends on the player, and really, again, it speaks to the coaching staff, because they do a good job either way of attracting talent and keeping kids interested. I think, you know, even after the Washington loss at home, which was really a tough loss. I mean, you're talking about a school that you're going head-to-head with for a lot of local recruits. I mean, Washington recruits really hard in Southern California and the city section specifically. I mean, they not only go after Southern California talent, but they're going after kids that are right in the backyard of USC. So DeAnthony Thomas, Greg Townsend, a lot of different players that they like, that USC likes. So when we lose at home in a tough game like that, you know, it does affect. It does affect, I think, the perception of where each program is going. Now, obviously, both teams have to play the rest of the season, and Washington's played a couple games since then where they have not looked very good, and USC's played a couple games since then where they have actually looked pretty good. I mean, they played well against Stanford defensively. That was tough. They didn't play well on the defensive side of the ball, but as a team, they fought hard and played a lot better against Stanford than I think a lot of people anticipated, and obviously playing against Cal, they did well. So I think that there's obviously that perception of what are you building towards. I mean, this is now kind of a new era for USC in a lot of different ways. It's USC really trying to rebuild in some ways. And it's weird to say that because, you know, they didn't go through a really bad season in terms of wins and losses last year. But with, I think, just the feeling of the NCAA coming down on them, Lane Kiffin coming in as a new coach, kind of the struggles early in the season, the loss to Washington, and then you lose back-to-back with Stanford, even though they played well against Stanford offensively. And I think as a team really fought hard in that game. It just felt for a while there, it was like, okay, this is the dynasty. It's over. You know, we everybody kind of came to terms with, all right, they're starting from a new place at this point. And this season, it's kind of about where are they building the foundation? You know, where do they go from here? What's the future from here? And with the recruiting trail, a lot of that is the same thing. You know, how they're building this recruiting class, the limitations they have, and how they have to be smart in order to look forward from this point on. And it's not all about right here and right now, but it's definitely about moving forward and kind of the rise of the program from, you know, this point on. So I think that, you know, the wins and losses, they can go either way. They can kind of show, hey, listen, yeah, we're not what we were. You know, back in, you know, 2004, 2005, 2006, but this is a new regime and we're building new things. Or, you know, Lane Kiffin comes in and they play well against Oregon and maybe they are able to beat Oregon. It's a sign all the recruits, look at what we can do under the current circumstances. Imagine what we can do with you here and going forward with you know, all the planets aligning a little bit more and things being more in our benefit. So it goes either way. It depends on the recruit, and I think it depends definitely on, you know, how things play out at that recruit's position and what they're looking forward to in their recruitment. You know, what factors did they see as important to their recruitment? I mean, if it's playing time, then, you know, that can be spun either way, regardless of wins and losses. If it's obviously the prestige of the program and wanting to win the national championship, you know, you can't go out there and look bad. And looking bad sometimes is not always about wins and losses either. It's about how you're playing in those individual games. So that's kind of what we have to watch for. And this is, again, it's going to be a national stage, and it's a forum for the Trojans to come out and show, you know, what they have under Lane Kiffin.
All right. We got some questions here. Ryan in Sun Valley, he wants to know how difficult it is for a commit to a school that is out of state. How difficult is it for a commit when he commits to a school that's out of state, when there's a big local school that's also offering and also recruiting him? You grow up in that area. Everyone's a fan of that big school nearby. There's got to be a lot of pressure on these kids by friends, family, and the community. What kind of adversity do they face when they do want to commit to an out-of-state school like that?
I think it's tough regardless, but it definitely, the adversity level kind of goes up and goes down depending on the state that prospect is in. If you're talking about a prospect in the Southeast, the adversity is incredibly high. You're going to have a lot of local schools with a lot of fans really pushing every day, you should go to the school, you should go to the school. It's going to be on Facebook. It's going to be in the classroom. It's going to be at practice. It's going to be at the games. You have a lot of local fans that are very aggressive in showing their school's pride and letting those kids know, hey, you should go to this school. This school's going to support you. It's local. You know, we're going to be there for you. And when you're that far out, there's just a lot of distance between that decision that the kid made, the prospect made, of going, you know, away from home and the school itself. So you're not only talking about a lot of pressure from the locals and the you know, kind of the surrounding area, but the lack of reinforcement in that decision from the school that's, you know, 3,000 miles away, 2,000 miles away. And that's what's going on with Kent Turin right now. There's a lot of Florida fans. There's a lot of Miami fans. There's a lot of Georgia fans. In that area where he lives, there's not a lot of people talking about USC. You know, there's not a lot of people that really know much about USC. And I'm sure when Kent Turin walks around with a Trojan hat on, people take a double take and they go, why are you going to USC? You know, and that's just, you know, that's a question that maybe puts a little bit of uncertainty in a prospect's head. So you always have to battle that as a school, especially when that prospect is committed early in the process. I mean, when he's out there and you committed in July like Kent Santorin, well, you got a long, long couple months until you may actually go back to your school of choice for an official visit or even an unofficial visit to kind of remind yourself, hey, this is why I committed here. And that makes it tougher, too. So it really depends, I think, if you're talking about Nevada or you're talking about a kid that, you know, maybe he's from Colorado. Those schools, I think the fan bases are not as rabid, and so you're not going to have the pressure. And there's going to be some pressure, and there's going to be some, you know, distance between the schools and what the communication level is sometimes, you know, being able to go back to the school for an unofficial visit, get on campus, and kind of get those feelings again of why they committed. But I think, you know, the pressure from the peers and from the people in the towns that you're at is a lot less when you're talking about, you know, a lot of the Western states and even the Midwestern states to a certain degree. I'm sure Ohio, there's probably a lot of pressure to go to Ohio State. But I think when you're talking about the Southeast and Texas, that's really where it gets the most difficult.
All right. Well, thanks for that question, Ryan. Next up is JD in Washington, D.C. I just flew in from Washington, D.C., JD. I don't think it's him, but I was visiting my sister out there. He wanted to know, so he wanted to get some clarification here, but his understanding is that USC can sign up to 9 players who can enroll early and not count against this year's class. However, Burks and Tureen now are unavailable to be early enrollees, and we thought that they would be before. That means there's only 4 early enrollees now. Is that correct? We have to use them or lose them. Is that right? So we just wanted to get some clarification on how that all works.
Yes, there's 4 right now. Andre Hadari, who is the kicker from Bakersfield, Pete McBride, who's the long snapper from Arizona, and then you've got the 2 quarterbacks, Max Wittig from Santa Ana Modern Day, and you have Cody Kessler from Bakersfield, Army All-American up at Bakersfield. So, yeah, you have the 4 that are early enrollees at this point. They do have a couple JUCO prospects. They actually have 4 or 5 JUCO prospects that they're looking at to see if they could come in early, but we don't know if any of those guys can get in early for sure. I think with the 2 offensive linemen, there's David Garnes, who's at the City College of San Francisco, who's originally from Alaska, who is a full qualifier at high school just because he was from Alaska, just really didn't get recruited. He should be good to go. He should be okay. When you're talking about a full qualifier at high school, usually they have the credits and are in the right place in terms of their admissions coming out of the junior college ranks, where they don't have a problem enrolling in January. That's really the key, is being a full qualifier out of high school. The same can be said for Aaron Douglas, who is the transfer I think it's Eastern Arizona from he's out there in Yuma from Tennessee. He transferred out of Tennessee when Lane Kiffin left Tennessee. So he was a full qualifier out of high school, went to Tennessee out of high school, was actually an All-American tight end who ended up being a freshman All-American tackle at Tennessee. So he's good to go in terms of being able to early enroll at USC or, you know, whatever college of his choice. So those guys should be pretty good. There's a couple other guys floating around on the radar that are JUCO guys. The high school prospects, it's harder, and it kind of talked about this over the summer, that you kind of have to wait and see what the fallout is from summer school, because a lot of guys, they don't know if they're really capable of being early enrollees until they go through those summer school classes. And with Kit Tureen, I kind of had a feeling he was going to have some issues trying to get out early, mainly because, I mean, he came out to USC on an unofficial visit, basically spent a week out here just hanging out, and I'm thinking, he's out here in July, he's probably got to be taking some summer school classes right now, and he's in L.A., so I was kind of wondering how that was going to work out. So it didn't work out, and he's not going to be able to enroll early. So with the high school kids, it's a little tougher. There might be another kid that they're able to finagle and get in early. We'll see how that goes. I'm not going to name any names just yet, but it's a challenge. It's difficult. And I think, you know, the coaching staff kind of came to that conclusion here at the early part of October, just looking at transcripts and collecting some of the data that they needed academically to look and see what kids can legitimately get in January. And I think the list is, it's not real long, and they've offered some kids regardless. You know, they took Burks, who's not going to get in regardless of whether he gets in early or not. You know, offering Corey Waller, linebacker out of Long Beach Poly. Those are guys that can't get in early who were kind of cusp guys, and now they're going after them regardless. So that opens up, again, that Pandora's box, that question of, you know, what is USC really doing? What is their real strategy when it comes to the scholarship sanctions and are they really adhering to those sanctions? Are they staying those sanctions? And if they stay the sanctions, is it wise to put that off a year into 2014? Or should they just take this year and try to get as many early enrollees as possible so they have, you know, only, you know, 3 years counting this year to go forward? I mean, it's, again, talking in circles when you start to get into that, because we just don't know what is really going to happen with the appeal and that particular penalty that the NCAA put on them. So, you know, we're going to kind of wait and see how that goes. But at this point, yeah, the early enrollee thing, to get 9 early enrollees would be very surprising to me. I don't know if you could even get to that number. I don't know if you could get to 7, quite frankly, without maybe taking a couple guys just to take them because they're early enrollees. So, hey, if you're a junior college prospect out there and you're 6'4", if you could get out early, you know, send your tape to USC because I'm sure
they'll take a look.
Looking at you.
They'll take a look. All right. And then one last thing. You were talking about, and I think it was in the previous podcast, you had some criteria for some getting some local players, California players, that USC should probably get at positions of need when you're talking about along the lines or at linebacker, things like that. He wanted to get your thoughts on V. Moala and Jason Gibson, a couple guys that do have offers from USC, but kind of get your thoughts on those guys and see if USC is going after them hard.
Well, USC was not going after Jason Gibson very hard. You know, they didn't have weekly conversations. He is a player that got a scholarship offer during the May evaluation period, and USC's recruiting him as a defensive end. But in terms of the other schools that have been recruiting him, he's talked glowingly about UCLA and Cal being the schools that are really after him and really have a lot of frequent contact with him. USC, he just felt like just wasn't on him hard enough, and I don't know if it's an issue that USC can't resolve, and if they wanted him to go back on him and recruit him hard and eventually sign him, or it's just one of those things where he feels USC has not put up enough time and investment into trying to recruit him, and, you know, he's kind of moved on. I mean, publicly, he has not moved on. Publicly, he continues to list USC as a favorite, the school that he's looking at. But I know that he's been a little bit confused to kind of what's going on with USC and maybe why they haven't recruited him harder. With V. Moala, USC's recruiting him hard. They're definitely on him. You know, what he thinks about USC genuinely is hard to figure out because he's not one for conversation, A. And B, I think he comes from a background that's very pro-Cal. And I think Cal, even though, you know, they got demolished by USC, it's kind of a convenient choice for him. And I think with V, that's going to play a big part and a big role. I think some kids, convenience sometimes it's the biggest factor in just, well, it's the local school, you know, my cousins has gone there, my teammates will probably end up there, you know, I'm just going to go to Cal. Really the big thing for him is to get him in on an official visit. USC's got to get him on campus at some point. They're supposed to get the whole Grant team on campus for the Rising Stars camp, and that fell through. And when I heard that fell through, I went, that's going to make it that much more difficult for USC to really sign him. And so somebody's got to get Moala on an official visit at some point. Now, I heard that he was up at Washington, so that's a good start. I mean, at least somebody's got him out of Sacramento, that got him out of the Bay Area to go see another school. So maybe that's, you know, kind of the first step and a couple of steps of getting him to actually take some visits and getting out of just, you know, hey, I'm a Northern California kid and I'm just going to go to the local school. Because that can happen with a lot of kids, and I kind of feel like with V. Moala, if he doesn't take that initiative to actually go see some of these schools he's got scholarships offers from, including USC, he's not gonna.
All right. Well, we got a lot of recruiting updates for this week heading into the Oregon game. We're gonna have a lot next week after USC plays Oregon. We'll check out uscfootball.com if you want updates on all the players that were down there on the sidelines. We'll be down there checking them out, seeing who's there, seeing what happens, seeing what the buzz, the scuttlebutt is as USC takes on Oregon this weekend. Gerard, thanks again for all the insights, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me.
All right, everyone else, we got one last segment. We're going to talk to Dan Weber, uscfootball.com beat writer. Get his thoughts on what's been going on in practice, how this team is preparing for Oregon. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
It's time to get back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. We've got Dan Weber on the line, uscfootball.com recruiting analyst. Dan's been down there checking out all the practices as USC gets ready for Oregon. What's been going on, Dan?
Well, I kind of like, it's reminiscent of, all those years where, USC was on top and every game was a big game and, number one, maybe in the nation on the line and that kind of thing. It's a little bit of a reversal here. It could have been awfully close, as Lane has said, and you kind of like that. A lot of coaches wouldn't admit, that they think about 50 times a day that they could be 7-0, 6 seconds or two plays and one in each game away from having two 7-0 teams in the game of the year. But there's a buzz, there's an energy, there's an excitement there, even without the, fans and observers and what have you that were there in years past. It kind of has a sense of the way it was. And you can tell the younger players are kind of getting with it, and they're getting back a little bit. I think, with the NCAA thing and, hanging over for so long and all the negativity from outside, especially about the program, that it was really hard to be part of the USC program for a while and have that, sort of swagger that USC's had all those years. And I think a lot of the, the younger kids, hey, we didn't do anything wrong, what the heck. But I think the Cal game just was such an infusion of confidence and, hey, we can play this game and we can do a lot of things well. And we're pretty good, and let's just show people. So there's a real sense of that, and it's obviously they're practicing faster, up tempo. They know they've got to do that. They did it, to get ready for Cal. It worked, obviously, on both sides of the ball, and you just see a continuation of that. And they really went after one another yesterday. There were a lot of, they're as close to tackling now full speed as you can possibly be without exactly saying go on, and really tackle full speed. I mean, there's a lot of contact. There's helmets popping off. There's guys wanting to square off with one another. And it's kind of interesting. We'll see how it plays out. They're playing a team that is so different. It's not like any other team probably we've seen in college football. And people are, trying to figure out how you match up with them and in terms of the tempo that they run their offense and the way they take chances on defense and turn the ball over on you. And it certainly worked for them. I mean, they had one, kind of close encounter with Arizona State, which USC, you talk to everybody at USC, and that's the blueprint. Arizona State forced Oregon into 11 punts. Unfortunately, Arizona State turned the ball over 7 times.
Yeah.
ended up, it was only 42-31. Probably Stanford was, 31-31. Stanford's driving, and they throw a completion down to like the 20 where they could have gone ahead, and they get, a kid gets targeted right through his helmet, knocked out, drops the ball. Oregon picks, it's not called, of course. Oregon picks the ball up and takes it, the other direction, and pretty, it's 38-31 Oregon. And that turned the game around, and, they got the last two scores. But it isn't like they just totally, what they did to UCLA, they've done that to everybody. They struggled a little bit against Washington State. So, it's
a lot of teams seem to struggle. Washington State's played a lot of teams kind of tough, where they haven't got the 60-5 blowout or whatever, but they play teams tough.
Yeah, I mean, their quarterback is probably the most single improved guy in the league, and everybody said he had that potential. He could play for he'd start for a lot of teams in the Southeastern Conference, for example, the Big Ten. They've got a great freshman receiver, I think, at Washington State. I think we look back at some USC games now, you look back at that Hawaii game, you know, USC, when you see what Hawaii's doing now and beating, you know, Nevada, you see what Washington State is doing. Those were actually, I don't think USC got enough credit probably for the way they played, at least on offense against Hawaii, the way they played against Washington State. You know, USC, you know, has handled Washington State, you know, better certainly than the other Pac-10 teams have. So maybe there were some indications in those games that, you know, of what might develop, and USC maybe just got a little bit ahead, and we just didn't realize it at the time.
All right. Well, there was some news yesterday at practice. I don't know if it's news, but it was kind of funny. You talked about it a lot in your practice report about Matt Barkley tweeting over the weekend. You want to give people kind of an update of what was going on with that? It was kind of funny.
Yeah, I was talking to his dad too yesterday on the sideline. It was the classic, you know, Matt's follow. You know, Matt really is following in the footsteps of Pete Carroll. I mean, he's, you know, he's got REO Speedwagon references. You know, when you interview him, the song lyrics, and you know, he tweeted about the upset in the UFC, I guess, Ultimate Fighting Championship, where the Cain Velasquez just absolutely crushed that champ Brock Lesnar here in and it was in Orange County, so it was at the Honda Center, and I think Matt, you know, Matt might have even made it, you know, because it was kind of a big story here, and he just tweeted, you know, well, you know, USC is the Cain Velasquez, you know, or whatever, Cain Velasquez is USC, is Oregon's to Brock Lesnar. And it was obvious he had no intention of dissing, you know, the Ducks or anything like that. And it's amazing you have adults, you know, males in their, you know, 30s, 40s, and 50s that are following the tweets of college kids, just, you know, 20-year-olds, 19-year-olds, and then publicizing them like, oh, my gosh, he dissed the Ducks, you know. Oh, wow. And he did nothing of the kind. It's just, you know, silly to say that. Basically, he was saying, you know, here's the champ gets beat, and here comes number one. And, you know, what do you think he's supposed to say? I think they're going to crush us, you know. I mean, it was just one of those. And as he said yesterday, he said, hey, it was just a matter. We've gone through a lot, you know, at USC and fought through a lot of adversity, and this was kind of one of those things that, you know, you just want to tell everybody, hey, see, this stuff, you know, it happens, where teams that, you know, are the underdog, you know, can, you know, rise up, and where a guy, you know, is the underdog and ends up, you know, winning big, and so that's kind of what he said. But I guess there was enough of a reaction, especially, you know, some of the national guys that cover college football and some of the Oregon media people who just went way over the top in terms of the reaction. He took it down, I think, like 6 or 7 hours later, and just said, you know, certainly didn't mean anything. Oregon's a great team. Not what I was even thinking about at all. So I think he handled it well. Lane said, you know him, if you know him at all, obviously not saying anything negative about Oregon. It was all about USC. But I'm not sure I would want to be somebody who's following every word that every college football player tweets and then sending it out like it's a really big news story.
A lot of guys are doing them from their phone, and it's just, you know, it's hard. You have 140 characters to, you know, you could misconstrue, you know, what some people are saying.
Yeah, I just don't think, I know the media has gone there, but I'm not sure that's where the media ought to be going. I'm not sure we should be into instant analysis of a player tweets essentially to, you know, their teammates. However, I guess what the one learning experience for college kids is, you may be only intending to tweet your teammates, but basically the whole world's listening.
Yeah.
And people can take out of those things whatever they want to take out of them. I thought Kelly yesterday, I guess, you know, of course, then that gave the media a chance to run to Kelly yesterday. What do you think? Are you going to put it on the bulletin board, you know? And Kelly said, well, we don't have a bulletin board. Everything's digital here, you know.
I like Chip Kelly. He's pretty candid about the stuff he says. I like that. It's pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty straightforward and all of that. Although he probably, you know, if he wanted to play the same game, he said, oh, that's high school stuff or whatever. Now, you could take it one way that the high school stuff is putting things up on the billboard. The other way you could take it is the high school stuff is you know, trying to pin it on you know, or that what Barkley was doing was high school stuff. I don't think either of those, you know, exactly what he meant. But, you know, you don't want to get into that, you know, circle of just, you know, he said, she said, you know, all that kind of stuff and go round and round. Just play the game, you know.
Makes sense. Well, let's talk about the injuries a little bit. We expected to see some guys coming back. Seems like the offensive line is back for the most part, but there's still a couple guys like Malcolm Smith isn't practicing. No Dylan Baxter.
Right.
Maybe give an update on some of the guys that were
not.
Yeah,
I think those are the two that you would say have the longest road to hoe. I think with Dylan, it surely looks like, I mean, it's down to the one toe, but I think part of the problem you've got, and that's what we learned, I think, last year with Jim McKnight, is it's hard to protect the toe and wrap it and, you know, restrain it properly, keep it from, and all that, and still have your shoe fit. You know, I mean, you can do it with your ankle or with your knee and, you know, with special wraps and things like that. But, you know, if you end up saying, okay, you got this protective toe cap or this splint or whatever, you can't wear your same size shoe. And then, you know, you're out there, you know, it looks like clown shoe, you know, on one foot, you know. Well, you know, if you're like Dylan Baxter, you can't run with a shoe that's, you know, on one foot that's bigger than the other foot. That would seem to be the problem. The hardest thing is to figure out how to, because I think even by last Thursday, he was saying it was only painful at times in some of his cuts and some of it wasn't. So, you know, I don't know. He hasn't been able to really go, you know, full go. I mean, he starts with his pads on usually, and it looked like the other day he was trying to talk his way into practice, but the trainers didn't let him. Now, I think today would be a crucial day for him. If he can come back today pain-free and they don't have to wrap that toe up too much, I think he could get in enough work where you'd feel really comfortable with him, because I think they're going to play pretty fast and they're going to try to do a lot of things, and they absolutely don't want to turn the ball over. I think the biggest thing in this game is just don't give Oregon any free shots. I think Malcolm, I would be surprised if Malcolm's able, you know, to play in any significant way. Just a guess, but, you know, wasn't in there yesterday. He's dressed and he doesn't look like he's favoring it terribly, but you really got, I mean, you're going to play against the Oregon offense. You really better be, you know, really, really full go. And then they've been taking it a little bit easy on Tyron Smith and given, and Butch Lewis too. I think it's really been a good break for the offensive linemen. So they've been giving Kevin Graff a shot at that tackle spot, and Zach Heber is getting, you know, some work on, you know, at guard. And so, you know, you want to go into a game with, you know, with another guard, another tackle ready to go. And I think Michael Reardon has gotten some shots, you know, at center. So I think they've got, you know, backups everywhere. And so I think offensive line, they're in pretty good shape.
All right. And then one last thing I just want to talk about. We had a question from Evan. He wanted to get an update on what's going on with Patrick Hall coming out there, if you've seen him out there. And, you know, and now that I think of it, maybe you should also mention Markeith Ambles a little bit too.
Yeah, okay. Patrick Hall, he sure looks like that, you know, knee brace is limiting. I mean, he just doesn't look like there's any way he can get up to speed yet. And it just looks like, as we remembered how DJ Morgan looked maybe in the summer and what have you, where you're kind of dragging that leg and the brace looks awfully big. And it just doesn't seem like he's been able to get anywhere near full speed, and maybe even less so. And maybe it's because when they did bring him back and tried to let him do a couple of things and realized that was probably a negative in terms of his knee rehabbing, it looks like they're just being very cautious and conservative and careful. And I know with Markeith, you know, people got a little bit of excitement because he, another one of the, maybe his was on Facebook, I guess, because they had the 4 days off and he went back home to Georgia. And there was some misinterpretation of what he exactly said before he went home. You know, people made it sound like, oh, is he not coming back? Well, yeah, that wasn't the case at all. But I saw him yesterday and during practice, you know, before practice, and during practice, you don't realize that maybe he's, he's not there. And I don't think any of us during practice realized he wasn't there. And then only afterwards does it sort of come out that apparently hadn't made some, whatever the various kinds of meetings, appointments, tutors, whatever, he the sense is that he hadn't made whatever those were supposed to be on Tuesday. He might not have been there. And that's the kind of thing that will get you, I think that's what caught up with Patrick, and I think that's the thing that, you know, that they reacted to. You know, you've got a responsibility, and if you're not living up to that, you're going to have to live up to that first before you get a chance to play. So we'll see. I don't know where this one heads. When you look at the fact that, you know, Kyle Prater's coming in next year as a freshman after redshirting, you know, the recruiting, if you look at, you know, the two wide receiver recruits are, you know, potential with, you know, Farmer and then Blackwell. And Dylan Baxter may be a significant receiver next year. You do wonder where are the numbers. You know, if you're a kid like that and you're looking and saying, you know, what are the numbers, you know, for me? He's got talent. There's no question about it. Kind of a free spirit, kind of a fun guy. Long way from home. So you're just being realistic. You know, I think a lot of freshmen have had kind of episodes like this at USC who are from across the country. So we'll see how this plays out. You know, I think there were people who didn't think Patrick Hall would work his way back, and he did. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know where that he's played four games, but not significant time. So he is, you know, not going to be able to redshirt. So he'd have to sit out a year if he went somewhere else. So I don't know. I really don't have a sense, and I'm not sure anybody else does. I think it's truly up to Markeith at this point.
All right. Well, Dan, great stuff. And we will see you out there this Saturday at the Coliseum. Hopefully everyone out there in podcast land will see you out there too. Don't forget, game day starts at 6 a.m. down there on campus. If you want to get down there and hold up signs and get on TV, you can get down there for that. And then the game, obviously, at 5 p.m. But it should be a lot of fun, Dan. We look forward to seeing you out there.
Yeah, this is the good old days. Number one, game day, all that kind of stuff. And it should be, you know, I do like, you know, it's just, there's a buzz. There's really a buzz, and that's fun.
Cool. All right, Dan. Well, thanks for that. And everyone else, thank you very much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. Check out peristylepodcast.com for more, and we will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.